Welcome to the Dying to Listen podcast. We have our guest here. If you'd like to introduce yourself.
Hi, everyone. My name is Jonathan. I guess you can say my company name is Kickin' Discs. Just kind of happened by chance, the name at least.
So we'll get into your origin story, because I know you have kind of a unique one. If you want to explain how you got into disc golf or back into it, and how you got into disc dying.
So I moved to San Diego when I was about 22. I started working at a sporting goods store. And at that time, that's when I started playing disc golf. But it was more of a pastime, I guess you could say. It wasn't something I was horribly into. My good friend Jake got me into disc golf, along with fishing, along with regular ball golf, video games. So really, disc golf was kind of just a something that we might do on the weekend or every other weekend. And then fast forward a few years, he moved away. So I basically didn't play disc golf at all for 10 or so years. I picked it up again roughly a year ago. So I guess you can kind of say I'm a COVID, in a way, COVID disc golfer. And when was it? Mm-hmm. Probably, I think it was in December that I injured my back somehow. And I don't know really how I did it. I just woke up one morning. I mean, I've had chronic back issues ever since junior high. But I don't know what really caused this new feeling, new sensation. And, went through the whole doctor thing, found out that I have two vertebrae in my lower back that are basically resting upon one another. There's no disc or anything. I wanted to still be part of the community. During that time, I couldn't do a whole lot, missed a lot of work, was looking at a lot of discs online. I kind of got caught up in the whole Reddit, what is it called, Disc Exchange, trying to buy up all these, like, what people say are hard to find discs. So I've got like a closet full of what some people might say are rare discs. And then backtrack, when I got back into disc golf, I didn't know what these numbers were on the discs. I was like, what are these numbers? Because when I first started playing, there were no flight numbers on the discs. And 20 years ago when I first started playing, sometimes the disc would go left, sometimes it would go right, depending on like how hard or soft I threw it. I didn't understand why it was happening. Mm-hmm. I was playing with DX plastic. I think I had a Valkyrie, and then the rest of them, I think, were all with I don't think they even make them anymore, but it was named mid-range, or sorry, multi-purpose. So it was, I don't know if that was considered mid-range and a putter, or an approach and a putter. I still have no idea. When I got back into it roughly a year ago, I was really, really confused, and in some ways I'm still really, really confused about the flight numbers on discs. So that's kind of my, I guess, shortened version of this, of my background.
We talked before, I'm curious to see if you have any of your old discs, because they might be worth some money.
I wish I did.
No.
I had them when I got back into it about a year ago. But they were so beat up. The discs were like, depending on how you threw the Valkyrie, you had a pretty good chance of slicing your finger open. That's how bad, like a big old chunk was missing from it. I didn't know, but I had spray painted some of the multi-purpose discs. So I ended up getting rid of all of them.
What specifically got you into disc dying?
Oh yeah, so I wanted to stay part of the community, and saw there's also a disc dying, I think it's called Disc Dying on Reddit, and saw a bunch of really cool things on there. I have kind of a ADHD, creative ADHD like you, And I just, you know, not being able to do much with myself during this time, being like horribly injured, I needed to find an outlet to kind of, I guess, keep my spirits up. So I did a lot of research, made a lot of mistakes, purchased the incorrect dyes. You know, once I got all the materials I needed, I kind of dove headfirst.
How did you know that you could actually dye a disc?
Like me personally, or how did I?
Well, how did you discover it?
I tried to find everything disc golf related on Reddit and other websites, and there was a, like I said, I think disc dyeing Reddit. I don't even know what you call it, a subreddit, and I just saw a lot of cool things on there, and you know, I was like, what is this? How are people doing this? And I ended up doing the research and finding out that there are companies that make dyes that will stick to plastic. And that's kind of how I stumbled upon it.
Were there any specific resources that helped you or you learned the most from?
Honestly, probably YouTube. And then asking, you know, just random people on Reddit, like, how did you do this, or what materials did you use, or how long did you let it sit in the bed, whether it was Floetrol or glue bed. Just a lot of reading and watching videos and occasionally talking to people or messaging people. But I was probably researching stuff for easily 6 months before I even did my first dye.
It's interesting that some people go to hardcore into actually researching, and other people are like, screw it and just send it. So it's interesting to see their perspective on that.
Yeah, well, you know, one of the mistakes I made was initially was I bought Rit Dye, and I tried dyeing a couple discs and it wasn't taking. I'm like, why isn't this working? I was like, this is metnic. Just nothing was sticking to the disc. And then I ended up doing a little more research and found out that I bought Rit Dye for tie dyeing t-shirts, not for dyeing discs. So I still have the Rit Dye. I was like, I'll hold on to this. Like, maybe in the future, my son and I can tie dye some t-shirts. So, had to wait a little while so I can afford the ProChem and other materials. And once I got the ProChem, that's when things kind of fell into place.
What was the first thing you tried to dye, and how did that go?
So there were four discs. I actually bought four of the 9-inch cake pans. I'm sorry. The Rit dye, the first two I tried to dye were, I think it was a Champion Clear Thunderbird. And some Latitude 64 disc. I can't remember what it was. Obviously, those didn't work. The second time I tried doing it, once I got ProChem, I did a Star Mako 3, an AVR, a Star AVR, a Valkyrie, Star Valkyrie. And then I happened to get a Discmania Glow Shogun. Those were all fails. Honestly, I knew of air bubbles, but all of them had white spots on them. And, you know, when I first pulled them from the bed and washed them off, I'm like, oh, these are so cool, except for all these white spots.
Yeah. What was your medium for your first dye? Like your beds?
Glue beds.
What did you use?
Yeah, glue beds. Clear glue beds. With ProChem mixed with acetone in 2 ounce like eyedropper bottles, glass ones. Mm-hmm. And then I dripped it on there. So it was like a, you know, drip dye glue bed.
So that was your first one, you know, with the Rit dye that you did.
The Rit dye I tried to do mixed with Floetrol.
Gotcha.
And like I said, it did not work, unfortunately.
What mistakes you make, you learn from, and you know not to do those again.
Yep. Just like in life, everything else.
Exactly. And that's kind of the goal of Disc Golf Dyers Guild here. And this podcast is to help educate people of, you know, here's our mistakes, don't do them. But it's still good to make your own mistakes, because that's how you learn.
That's definitely true with everything, honestly.
Yes. Yeah. Well, let people learn more about you and your disc dyeing. What disc plastic do you like to dye?
Right now, since I'm still fairly new to it, I like to get the the Innova Fridays, so I can get three star F2 discs for like $13 each, and then I get a free disc. I usually ask them for a clear because it's oftentimes champion, so I ask for a clear one, and they usually, you know, give me what I request, which is nice. So for the longest time, it's been star plastic, but recently I started dyeing Discmania Neo. Neo, the softer plastic. Anyway, I like the Discmania plastic.
Yeah, I recently started dyeing that as well, and I'm like, this is pretty good.
Yeah, there's something weird with the star plastic, and maybe it's just the way I'm dyeing, where even after I wash the glue off or the Floetrol off, it feels like there's little, I don't know, there's little, like, it's almost rough to the touch.
Really?
I can't figure it out.
I'm assuming you clean the discs beforehand?
Both, before and after.
Yeah. Huh. So, interesting.
Yeah, I don't know if there's anybody out there that has experienced that too, or that might be able to tell me what's going on.
Do you think it's like some of the dye particles still left on there that stuck on there?
No, because there's no like specks. There's no spots of dye. It's so weird. Maybe it's because they are they have two plastics.
I mean, potentially, but what about the Neo plastic?
Is that the same issue? No, it doesn't do it with Neo. Every other brand of plastic I've dyed, there's no little like rough spots on it. It's so weird.
Huh. Well, maybe it is the F2. Who knows?
Yeah, maybe.
Again, another thing that you kind of touched on, do you have a favorite dye brand, and do you have a favorite color that you like to use?
Well, Prochem. That seems like what everybody recommends and what everybody uses, unless I guess you're doing spin dyes, which like some people still use Prochem. But I like the neon colors, the brighter colors.
For sure.
I've always been into like the neon, the bright neon green. That's something that I've used for my photography.
I like the bright colors because, one, I like bright colors. Two, you can find the disc slightly easier when you shank it into the woods.
Yes, definitely.
Do you have any must-have accessory for dyeing?
This is a tough one. I mean, I guess you could say it's either my phone or the computer. Since I'm still learning, I guess looking at YouTube and reading stuff on Reddit and getting ideas, or if I'm running into problems, I hopefully can find it on one of those too. So it would either be my phone or computer.
Huh, that's a interesting but fascinating answer. Awesome. I know you just started disc dyeing and you're trying to find your style, but do you think you have a signature style that if someone looks at it and like, hey, that's this guy?
I don't think I have one yet. I know that's something that I heard a lot in school when I was going to school for graphic design and photography, that they're like, you need to find your voice, or, you know, find your brand or find your style. And I don't know why. I could never like just sit on one style. I just not me. There's one disc dyer, what's the name she goes by? Happy Tree Dyes, I think. Where she's got many, at least in my opinion, she's got many different styles, and I think that's really cool. That she can, you know, do more than just one.
Having one style can be a plus or a negative, depending on how you look at it. Me, I like to obviously try new things and just see what's out there. You know, I like doing the stencil dyes, but, you know, there's so many different things that you can try. Is there a favorite method that you currently like doing?
I like the Floetrol beds. They're easier, faster. I don't really have a whole lot of time to put into like really intricate designs. I have a very small space that I dye in, and I can't really dye during the day because it's too hot. So I do it at night, and I spend about maybe an hour, and then I let my disc sit for 24 hours and then pull them out, and I do that every 24 hours or so.
Gotcha. So where is your dye lab set up?
It's actually a like storage closet, and you can't access it unless you go outside. So you go out the sliding glass door, you go through another door, and in this, it's probably like 5 by 5 feet, overestimating. And it also has the hot water heater in it. So I have a very small, like maybe 2 by 2.5 foot space that I dye on, and that's got shelves. I know some people use heat lamps, but I don't use heat lamps just because they sit for 24 hours. And during the day, especially right now, being like 100 degrees outside, I'm sure it's probably 120 in that room.
Like you're mentioning, it gets hot there, so you don't need the heat lamp. Yeah, I'm curious to see how that affects your dye versus like how everybody else is doing it. I mean, you go like the natural way.
Yeah, I mean, I think it works for me, and it works for what I can do as far as how much time I can spend. I got a 4-year-old kid and got to put him to bed. I have to work every day. Yeah, it just seems to work. Although I am running into some problems right now, and I'm not sure if it's due to being too hot and possibly sitting for 24 hours in a Floetrol bed. I was able to get like 3 pulls from one bed. And then I think, you know how when you first open the Floetrol bottle, there's like the clear stuff on top, and then you mix it. I think what's happening is those two, I guess you could call them ingredients, are starting to separate because they've been sitting for maybe 48 to 72 hours. So it's starting to separate. So I don't think I can get really more than 2 pulls from one Floetrol bed before I start running into issues.
Huh. Interesting. Have you ever experimented with not letting it sit as long?
Not yet. That's something I would like to do. I have no other space to do it. I don't want to die inside, especially with my kids' hands getting into everything. I don't want to spill on the floor. We don't own this place, so if I spill on the floor, like, we're going to end up paying for it in the long run.
Yeah.
Prefer if I could, maybe every 12 hours. But that's hard to do during the week because I work outside the house. So that's why it's just been a 24-hour thing right now.
You got to get like a dye robot or hire somebody to come over and like, hey, take this out.
Yeah, I could do that. Maybe I could ask Jenny, my partner, if she could do it because she works from home.
Yeah, I would be curious to see if a shorter sit time would help with that, just in general. But I mean, you have your circumstances, and that's why you do what you do. Is it just because that's how it works out?
Yeah.
I know you're a relatively new dyer, and I'm sure you've made plenty of mistakes and are still making mistakes. Even I'm making mistakes. But do you have one mistake that stands out?
Can I mention 2, actually?
Sure.
So during those first 4 that I did that actually took the dye, I think some of the spots were actually sweat because it was so hot. Occasionally, like, a drop of sweat would come off my nose, and I'm like, where did that go? And I couldn't figure out if it went into the bed or if it landed somewhere else. So honestly, I do think some of those spots were because of sweat. And then there was another time I tried to do a Floetrol bed, and it was a VIP harp. It was, what do they call it? The floating cup or the walking cup method.
Yeah.
I was trying to do that, and everything looked fine. And I put the disc in it, waited the 24 or so hours, pulled the disc, and it was basically it was very saturated, but it was like a lighter shade of brown. For some reason, the colors, I don't know what happened. And that was one of my failed disc dyes. I mean, I managed to save it because it was a light enough color where I ended up putting it in a glue bed with yellow, orange. You know, the beginner's kit from ProChem, it comes with like the, what do they call it? Like slightly red, slightly pink. I forget what color it is. But it's a pink color. I used that and blue, and then I just swirled it and then put it in there, and it ended up working out. So now it's in my bag.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of failed discs go in my bag.
I try to purchase and dye discs that I know that I either will throw or have the possibility of trying. Like, I've got other discs, like I said, in my closet that I would like to dye. But because I'm still learning, I don't want to ruin them. I've got some Nate Sexton Firebirds that I'd like to dye. I've got a couple of the Jeremy Kohling Thunderbirds, a couple Sidewinders. I mean, I guess I would throw the Sidewinders, but just some other stuff. Polecats. Mm-hmm. I don't want to ruin them.
Well, just wipe the stamp and send it.
Yeah, that's true.
Are there any favorite dyers that you like that you want to call out? And if there are, what do you like about them?
So actually, the person who I think really got me interested in disc dyeing, and it's not necessarily his style that his style is amazing, but it's not something that I was like, oh, I want to do that. And I just, like his style, I wanted to just start disc dyeing. But he goes by the name of Happy Little Accidents. I actually came across his work on Reddit before he started his Instagram page. I actually have a couple of his discs hanging on my wall. I don't have any of my own, but I've got a couple of his.
Awesome.
And then also Happy Tree Dyes. I like her stuff too.
Yeah. So Happy Tree Dyes is going to be on the podcast I ever scheduled.
Yay. I can't wait.
Yes. Neither can I. I know you're doing a lot of research. Was there any specific dyer that you learned the most from or struck you?
There's, what is his name? Daddy Mac Dyes. I like his videos. Then there's also, I think it's Dye Academy. Mm-hmm. The Dye Academy is where I saw the putting the Floetrol in like the clear condiment bottles. So you can just have them available whenever you want. So that's how I do my Floetrol beds now.
Nice.
So just, yeah, I think Daddy Mac, those ones that look like the epoxy, like the wood ones with like the blue epoxy in the center, those ones are amazing. I wish I could do that.
He makes it look easier than how
yes,
it is.
Yes, definitely. I know with practice, just like anything else, maybe I could get there someday.
Yep. Me too. Was there anybody else?
I think he goes by Darroj Dyes, D-A-R-R-O-J Dyes. I can't remember. I might be spelling that wrong or butchering the name, but he's got a lot of cool stuff on there too. Just the bright colors. Oh, there's one other, and I don't remember his name. I saw him on The Differences Doing It. He was featured on one of the YouTube videos, and he's a spin dyer, and he does like the very intricate, you know, while it's spinning, he like puts the glue on the edge, and then he'll like take that little tool and move it up and down. His stuff's really, really cool. And sorry, I can't remember his name. But that's something I would like to get into is spin dyeing and trying to do stuff like his.
Yeah. If you need a spin dye jig rig, I do sell a 3D printed one if you're interested.
Okay. I'll hit you up.
I'll send it to you for free. Don't worry about it.
Okay. I appreciate it.
Yes, that's my payment for you being on a guest.
Oh, well, you didn't have to pay me. I appreciate it.
Yes. So, words of wisdom. Is there anything that you... any tips or tricks that you would give anybody new starting out?
So I kind of thought about this a little bit, and I am my own worst critic. Same way with my photography. I have people tell me all the time, like, oh, your photography is amazing. And I'm just like, oh, okay. Like, thanks. Like, I don't think it's that great because it doesn't look the way I wanted it to look. Mm-hmm. So going into disc dyeing, I hate to say this, but don't have any expectations. Mm-hmm. because I've found that the discs that I really try to do, you know, I have an idea in mind and I'm like, oh, I want it to look this certain way. And then I get excited because, you know, I'm coming home from work and I'm like, I'm going to pull this disc from the bed. And then I pull it out and I'm like, it doesn't look at all like I wanted it to. I basically have taught myself to kind of like, I guess you could say, back off of it a little bit and just have fun with it and just almost like splatter paint, just let it flow. I don't know if you're doing a glue bed, just do some interesting swirls and just let it be and just don't have expectations. And oftentimes the ones that I put less time into look better than the ones I put more time into. So,
yeah, it's funny how that works out. And, I feel like a lot of dyers are artists. You don't have to be an artist, but we have imposter syndrome as well. It's like, we don't think we're that good. And, you know, again, we're our own worst critic. So just like with disc golfing, if you take it seriously, you're not going to have fun.
That's true. That's the same with a lot of other things that I've learned and taught myself and have told other people. So,
yeah. Is there anything that you would do differently now you know what you know when you first started out?
I don't know. I honestly don't know. Maybe even more research. I don't know. It's hard to say.
Yeah, I mean, if you say nothing, that's perfectly fine too, because you ended up where you are because of what you did.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure it'll evolve over time, and I'll learn later that that's the change that I made, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. You know what I would love to do is in another year to have you on the podcast again to see what you've learned or done differently and how you've grown.
I would love to do that. I would appreciate that. That'd be awesome.
Yeah. We'll make that happen if we still exist. Pretty sure we will, but.
Well, it's going good so far. I've liked both the podcasts before me, so you were great.
Thank you. I appreciate it. My goal for the Disc Golf Dyers Guild and these podcasts is one, for me to learn, and to also spread the knowledge to the dying community. Just to help that grow and, you know, become a resource for that.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate what you're doing for everyone.
Awesome. We'll get to know you on a personal level now and we'll do some of your favorite faves. So do you have a favorite band or song?
I would probably have to say the Grateful Dead. And the reason why I say that, it was the first concert, like, if you want to call it rock, I guess it's like a combination of rock and folk and country and a mix of other things, funk and whatnot. But it was the first concert that I went to, a rock concert, when I was probably like 12 years old. Jerry Garcia was still alive. Mm-hmm. And it was just a fantastic experience. Everything about it was fantastic.
That's awesome.
And then another reason too is there's a certain song called Uncle John's Band. And around that time that the first concert I went to, my nieces also came to the concert. And when they heard that song, they would reference it for me, like Uncle John's Band. Like, so it's kind of stuck.
Where was that concert that you went to?
In Sacramento. That's where I grew up.
Gotcha. So you're born and raised from Sacramento?
Yes, definitely. Yeah. Cool. It's, I love the city. I miss the city. I miss like being closer to family, but it's even hotter in Sacramento than it is here in San Diego. So
yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah.
What is your favorite food?
Sushi. And second favorite is Mexican food. 'Cause aside from going to Mexico, I think the best Mexican food is going to be in San Diego. Or Southern California, at least.
I was going to say, I feel like both of those would be where you're at, a great location to get some good food for that.
Yeah, I actually had sushi last night, so it was fantastic.
Not going to lie, kind of jealous.
Well, come on out, and I'll treat you to some good sushi.
Potentially. I actually have a friend out there, and I've been meaning to come visit.
Where do they live? Do you know?
Now you're putting me on the spot. I can't remember the exact location offhand.
Okay, no problem. San Diego is fair.
Yes. What is your favorite beverage?
Water, Dr. Pepper, and a few years ago, I wouldn't say drink a lot, but I used to just, I'm in a pool league, so basically every week I'm in a bar, and the drinks that I would have at the bar, because they're cheap, is going to be like a Coors Light or Bud Light or Budweiser or something on, you know, cheap on tap, domestic beer. But a few years ago, I stumbled upon the type of beer what they call sour. So they're tart. Sometimes they have a little bit of a fruity flavor to them. I don't like the overly fruit ones, or overly fruity ones. Just not my style, but it's a sipping beer. It's kind of refreshing as well. So there's one specific brand or brewery. I think they just go by San Diego Brewery, and they make one called Passion Pool. And it's it's like the best sour beer I've had. And when I say sour, it's not like gone bad sour. It's like they make it specifically for that. And they can't even brew it like on the same lines as the other beer, because it'll ruin the other beer. So they have to use the same lines, the same whatever they use to brew.
I haven't had a beer in probably 2 or 3 years. The main reason is because I'm on keto. So it's got all the carbs. But I would break keto to try that, because I've never tried that before.
So. Oh, it's fantastic. Again, if you ever come out to San Diego, like, I'll meet you somewhere and buy you one. It's fantastic.
Nice. Water, also a great choice, because, boy, howdy, do you need water.
Oh, especially right now.
Yeah. Also interesting that you say Dr. Pepper, because I feel like that's kind of more of a Southern thing, which, yeah. But yeah, nice.
Or Mr. Pibb. Have you heard of Mr. Pibb?
Yeah, but it's not the same.
It's not. Or you could get the Walmart brand. What do they call it at Walmart? I don't know. That's like some weird name, and it's basically not the same, but it's a copy of Dr. Pepper.
Yeah. All right. So what other hobbies do you have?
Photography and pool league, you know, billiards league. And if you want to call it a hobby, being a father.
Yes. I mean, that can be considered a full-time job. So. Yes.
Definitely.
What got you into photography?
I had always been into photography based on, I guess, what my parents have told me. I think it was either my mom or my dad said that they would catch me in our closet, our hall closet, with the light turned off, using their really small, it was like a camera like this big, and it would have the strobe bulbs, like 5 or 6, kind of in a rectangular shape, just flashing the bulbs. And they're one-time use, so like they would go out to use their camera, and they're like, why are all of our bulbs used? So, and then in high school, I took a photography class and ended up being the teacher's assistant, and that was film. It was a film class. And then I kind of lost touch with it for quite a few years. And then I met some people after moving to San Diego that were really into photography. And I got my first DSLR, a D5000. And since then I've upgraded, and that's, kind of how I got back into it.
So you are on the light side and you use Nikon, correct?
Yes, I use Nikon.
Fantastic. Nikons unite.
Ooh. Yes, definitely.
So I'm also big into photography. I did that for, still kind of doing it, but not as much, but I did that for a long time. And that, again, just another hobby to suck my time and money.
Yeah, I guess you could say I've been in a year or two creative funk with photography. I still love it, but it's tough for me because I like landscape, and I've already shot most of everything I can in San Diego, let alone if I like search the place I'm going to, there's already thousands of pictures of the same thing. So
I know how you feel, and it's getting harder and harder to bring out the camera because I'm like, okay, is it worth doing this? I'm not going to like what I'm going to take. It's probably already been done before. Kind of lost the creative spark to take photos. Like, you know, when he first started taking photos, he took photos of everything.
Yeah.
Ooh, flower on the sidewalk. Take that. Ooh, crack in the sidewalk. Ooh.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just felt like I lost interest, but if I do have something specific in mind, I'll pull it out.
Yeah, I often find that the pictures, again, same thing, like similar to disc dyeing, like I feel like the pictures that out of the camera, from the camera, like no editing, nothing, oftentimes it's the ones that I put the least amount of effort into that are the best pictures.
Yeah, I remember looking back at some of my old photos that I barely did any processing on. I'm like, this is pretty good, but I didn't do anything to it.
Yeah. And that's kind of the struggle I was getting into. I'm like, oh, I like this image. I don't know. I got into the habit of like tweaking everything to make it look good. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, why am I spending 6 hours on this one photo? Like, what a waste of time, in my opinion, you know? And I understand all the settings and functions of the camera and how they use them. It's just, yeah, it's tough. What do they say? Like, you're lucky if you get 10% out of 100, mm-hmm. or, you know, that are actually worthy of showing and sharing to people. So
I was, I guess, raised in the digital era. So for me, it was just spray and pray, take a bunch of photos and hopefully you get a good one.
Yeah.
Unlike film where you had some physical limitations.
I mean, I kind of thought about this too with photography. It's not really, you've probably heard this before, it's not really the camera that takes good pictures. It's the person mm-hmm. behind the camera. And that kind of, in my opinion, relates to disc golf, right? You have to keep using the camera to understand how it works and to become good with that technology or that camera. And the same mm-hmm. same idea with the disc. Like, you can, in my opinion, you can give somebody a I'm going to name this because I like this disc, the Discmania Essence. You let them throw it enough times, they're going to be able to use it. And yeah, I don't know. I kind of went off on a tangent, but
no, that is a great analogy that I've never put together, but it does make a lot of sense. It's knowing your gear and how to use your gear. It doesn't matter what gear you have, but you know, the, gear buying syndrome is real. Like, ooh, I needed to get a new lens to make me better. Ooh, yep. I need to get a new disc to make me better.
Yep. I bought a used macro lens. Like, it's made specifically for macro. I bought one used. I paid like, well, I didn't pay for it. Jenny did, my partner, used for like $750. And I've maybe shot 100 pictures with it. It's expensive. I mean, the same thing with, I mean, disc golf as a whole really isn't that expensive, but trying to find that disc that works well for you. I kind of got caught in the like, oh, I need to try this disc and this disc. Oh, Simon Lazat's using this one or Nate Sexton's using this one. I named those because later I'll bring them up again. But it's like, that's why I have a bunch of these discs in my closet. It's because I was like, oh, like I should use that disc because so-and-so uses it or everybody else uses it. And I'm like, I can't throw this thing. I just can't. Mm-hmm. so I've had the disc down on a lot of my discs. Far as speed, and I don't even really throw distance drivers anymore.
I've tried a bunch of discs and it's like, ooh, shiny new disc. That's going to make me a better player. But I have all these discs. And I only use like 5.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of what I've fallen into.
So I've been trying to limit the discs that I use. I'm actually been using a lot of lighter weight discs, which helped me get the actual flight numbers out of that. So with my noodle arm.
Yeah, my noodle arm too. I get more distance off my Essence than I have any distance driver in my bag.
Yeah, it's funny how that works, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't really play as much as I'd like to, or at least my mind would like to. And I went out and I've been going out and field testing or field work more than I've been playing actual courses. And I finally broke 300. What was it, like 3 weeks ago?
Nice.
And I threw 375 with my essence.
That's crazy awesome.
Yeah. Felt good.
I bet. It's like, yes, I can crush it.
Yeah. But then when I go and throw it on the course, like I did last weekend, I couldn't get anywhere past 250 maybe with it. So.
Yeah. Again, funny how that works.
Yeah.
All right. Disc selection. So, if you had to pick three discs for the rest of your life to play any course in the world, what would those three discs be?
I already named one, the Essence. I would probably choose... What mid-range would I choose? This is a tough question. I will go to a putter. I'll skip everything else for now. Putter is the Firefly. I recently picked up two of each plastics that they make them in. So right now I'm just playing with the DX version in case I don't like it. Well, I do like it, but my thought was if I don't like it, I can hopefully get rid of the other ones. You know, make my money back at least. And then it's probably a tie between a Buzz and a Rock. If I had to choose one, I'd probably choose... People might hate me, but the Rock.
Oh.
I feel like I get it's more consistent for me.
I've tried both, and when I was throwing them, my son has come in. Buzz.
Sorry.
Oh, that's fine.
Do you want to say hi?
Hi.
I know you can't hear me, but I'll wave so you can, you know, see me. So far, it's been a common theme of children coming in and saying
hi. He says
hi.
Yeah, it's his bedtime.
Nice. Very cool.
So enamored by the... Okay. Good night. I love you, buddy.
I love you.
I love you too. Go to bed.
Come on. Let's go.
I'm sorry.
No need to be sorry because I have a 5, soon to be 6-year-old daughter, and she has a big personality. So that's been fun.
Yeah. He's a fantastic kid and a lot of personality.
That's awesome.
That's definitely true.
So has he dyed any discs?
He wants to. Sometimes he'll help when I'm cleaning them off. And his way of helping, really all I allow him to do is watch. Just because I don't want dye to get everywhere. Our counter, so I dye in that closet, but I actually rinse and clean them off in the kitchen. Mm-hmm. And again, like I said, we don't own this place, but the countertop, it's a very, very, very white marble. I've been fortunate enough where I have gotten very, very small drops of dye on it, or been able to bleach the dye out.
Mm-hmm.
But I immediately, like, as soon as I notice it, that's when I clean it. So if I hadn't noticed it and sat for a couple days, I may not be so lucky.
Yeah, you might need to get something to wash it down in your little station.
Yeah, there's an outside faucet. I should probably use that and get like a Home Depot bucket or something.
Yeah, I don't want to jinx you, but moving it from outside to inside, there is that potential of dripping.
Well, actually, what I do is I take... You're not wrong, but what I do is I take the disc out and then I put it in another 9-inch pan that has no dye in it.
Hmm.
So the dye, the Floetrol bed or the glue bed never comes into the house. Okay. It's just the disc that was taken out of the... But still, there's the potential of tripping and falling, and I stress out about it every time.
And speaking of your kid, have you ever taken him disc golfing with you?
I actually took him out for the first time. So he's been out with me before, like we've gone to the course, but we're throwing putters at a basket. They're mm-hmm. practice baskets. But I took him out for the first time last weekend. I wasn't sure if I was going to, but then I actually, right where the practice baskets are, is hole 5. And I saw that there was a large break of no players. And I'm like, okay, let's go. So I gave him a Discmania link. You know, I would tee off, he would tee off, and then we would go to where my disc landed, throw again, and kind of got through 9 holes. But halfway through the nine holes, he was wanting to play in every dirt pile, wanting to pick every flower. And then he would, you know, yell at me, "Daddy, Daddy, wait." And I'm like, "Come on, like, hurry up. You got to pick up the pace." But yeah, it was a good time. He had fun. But he was filthy dirty when we were done.
Hey, I mean, that's a boy for you. So
yeah.
Well, hopefully you can bring him out some more, and he'll be your doubles partner.
Yeah, I hope so. He's always asking to watch disc golf on like YouTube or, you know, the tournaments that are happening. He's like, "Daddy, awesome. Can we watch disc golf?" And I'm like, "Sure." And then he asks the names of every player, which is cool too.
So, Lee, perfect hole. Do you have a favorite course and or favorite hole that you've ever played that, you know, stuck to you and gave you a core memory?
So I don't get out much in the sense of out of San Diego. So with that being said, I've only played courses in San Diego. My favorite course is Morley Field. And that's also the first course I've ever played on. And I mean, core memories, like with my friend Jake, you know, he was the one that got me into it, as well as all the other stuff that I'm into, like RC cars and ball golf and fishing, like I mentioned earlier. I think it's hole six. And the tee box, you have the road right behind you, and it's like wide open. From this tee box, you can see, like, I think it's hole five, 11, six, and I believe seven as well. So you can see a lot of like what's going on, and it's downhill. Mm-hmm. And the nice thing about this hole is there's usually a slight backup, not as bad now as it was years ago. Cause years ago they didn't have tee times. So you could just show up and play and you just horrible backup. But, the reason why I like it is just because it's kind of a break for everyone. As mentioned, there's usually some sort of backup, so you get to socialize with other disc golfers. So far, I haven't really met anybody that I'm like, "Oh, this person's unpleasant for," you know, trying to be polite and nice on your podcast. But yeah, it's just a hole that it's, like I said, it gives everybody a break and a chance to socialize with other disc golfers.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Also interesting. That you have tee times there, because courses here, it's just, you know, play whenever.
Well, so as far as I'm aware, it's the only one in San Diego that you have to also pay for. So years ago, they didn't have tee times. So you, like I said, you could just show up and play anytime you want. But they have, first and foremost, they have a really, really, really tiny parking lot. So imagine hundreds of people showing up at the same time. There's not enough parking. And if there's a hundred people showing up at the same time and want to play, well, now you've just got horrible backups. I remember like when I first started playing on, like I said, I think it's hole five or six, the one I was just talking about, where you could have a backup lasting upwards of an hour.
Jeez.
Just because I think it is the longest hole there. So there are some, there's the potential that you could actually throw far enough where, you know, close enough to where people are putting. There is that possibility. So the people that know that they can throw that far have to wait for them. And then it's just kind of backs, you know, vicious cycle. It's just very, very slow. And now with the tee times, it's a lot faster. I played one day, I think, again, back in the day, I think the longest time it took for us to play was like 4 hours. Now I played randomly with some other single player, and the two of us finished in an hour and 15 minutes. Pros and cons, right? Some people might want to stay for 4 hours. Some people might only have 2 hours to spare. So it's like, you know, weigh out the pros and cons. But one thing I don't, and sorry, Morley Field, one thing I don't like about the tee times is if you want to play by yourself, or let's say with a group of three, you and two of your friends, you either have to pay for all the five slots or you pay for just your three spaces. And there's a possibility of two other people paying for those spots at the same tee time. So you end up playing with other people, which isn't necessarily a bad thing, but there are times where you just want to play with you and your wife or mm-hmm. you and just your buddy that you haven't seen in a while. And now you've got other people playing with you. Hmm. Again, it's not, I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing. Mm-hmm. but I could see how some people may not want to play with other people.
Yeah. How is the disc golf scene out there? Is there a lot of courses? Are the courses fairly busy and congested?
I mean, Morley Field's always busy. Again, not as bad as it was in the past. I play at Kit Carson quite a bit because I actually live closer to Kit Carson now. And it's a free course. It's usually not busy. Even on the week, it's busy, but it's not an issue where you're waiting forever mm-hmm. on any hole. I know there are other courses. What is it, Goat Hill? I'm not sure how busy that is. I've only played there a couple times. Really, I spend most of my time at Kit Carson or Morley Field.
All right. Next topic, dream date. So, if you had to pick one pro player to hang out with, who would that be?
My top two are either Simon Lizotte or Nate Sexton. If I had to choose one over the other, I would probably have to choose... Oh man, this is tough. I'd probably have to choose Nate Sexton.
Why is that?
I feel like I would be able to relate with him more. You know, being a little bit older, I'm not young anymore. I mean, I'm not old, but I'm in my mid-40s. So mm-hmm. I think I'd be able to relate to him more. He also just seems a little bit... There's nothing wrong with Simon at all. I think the reason why the other person was Simon is because I would love to see the crazy stuff he does in person as far as on the course. Because you can definitely tell that he likes to entertain people as well, not just play disc golf. He likes to throw shots to entertain people. But yeah, and I mean, I feel like Nate Sexton, like if we were on the golf course, like he'd be totally willing to give me pointers and teach me things and talk about family and having kids and, you know, all that stuff. And it would just, I don't know. He seems like the type of person that you would just feel like we've been longtime friends. That's just kind of the vibe I get from him. And if you've ever seen, if you've ever seen the videos that he's in with Jeremy Colling and Paul Ulibarri, he's like the most calm of the three of them.
No, it makes perfect sense, and I totally agree about that.
I appreciate you agreeing.
Yes. No, you're wrong. You picked the wrong person that you should hang out with.
Podcast over.
Yes. And we're done here.
Yeah.
I guess, is there any other disc dying stuff that you would like to talk about?
I think I kind of touched upon everything that I know so far, or actually, I guess I do have a question. So there's another disc dyer I've seen. I don't know who it is, but half of the disc looks like it's been spun die or it has been spun die. And then the other half in a weird shape, right? Looks like it's either a glue bed or a Floetrol cell die. In my mind, I'm thinking that they have two separate like stencils and then they have to like put one on and take one off to dye it. Like, do you know how that one's done?
You know, I've been wanting to do that and I have a good theory of how they do it, but I honestly don't know how they do it. The only way that I can think of is they mask it off somehow, either with the vinyl or potentially glue, depending on what they do. I'm actually curious myself because I actually recently wanted to try that. I got to figure that out, but I'm slightly scared with the vinyl because I'm thinking it might be too sticky, and either if I have the stamp on there, it would pull up the stamp or pull up a lot of the dye. The glue, I feel like that's a lot of area to cover to mask that off with glue.
Yeah, I mean, I've done one disc where I've masked off with glue and wasn't very much space I had to do it, and it still was tedious.
Yeah.
So I can't imagine doing like half a disc.
Yeah. So if anybody listening knows, please comment so we can figure this out.
I mean, I thought it would be cool. Like, you could do that with circles, right? You could do like the circle mass. Do two circles, remove the inside first, and that's what you do, your glue bed or your cell die or whatever else. And then when that's done, you would take off the outer ring, and that's where you do your spin. But I don't, I mean, that would still look cool in my opinion, but it wouldn't look as interesting as the weird wavy pattern going through.
But yeah, the circle, that would be easy because you don't need to remask that other bed. But yeah, well, if I figure it out, I will let you know.
Okay, cool.
All right. So thank you for being on the podcast. Where can people find you at?
Really, I'm only on Instagram. I do have some things or some discs on Etsy, also Kickin' Discs. I have a domain name, kickin'discs.com, and I'm still kind of putting together a website. And then I'm kind of in the early stages working on something with somebody else, some other disc dyer on Instagram. But like I said, it's in the early stages, so it may not even, it may not even happen.
Well, thanks again for being on.
Thank you.
And I will reach out within a year so I can have you on again to see how you've grown.
I can't wait to see that myself. I appreciate you having me.
Alrighty. Well, you take care.
You too. Thanks again.